Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk to our baseball insider from ESPN, Buster Olney. Buster, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm loaded up. Got a lot to talk about with you today.
Buster, you are loaded up. Something that I do not want to talk to you about, but I have to because it happened, and I did not like seeing it, is watching my favorite non-Royal, Max Scherzer, straight out of the University of Missouri, pitching. And then in the middle of an at-bat, he looks over the dugout and says, I'm done, and gives them the cutoff sign, I'm coming out of the game. And then, of course, you wonder, oh, boy, is something wrong with his arm? When a bulldog like Max Scherzer is leaving the game and says he can't go on in the middle of an at-bat, you know something's got to be wrong, but it looks like maybe it's not as bad as we thought. It's not his arm, it's his side. What are you hearing about Max Scherzer?
Yeah, and I think you put the context right. When Max comes out of a game in the way that he did, which is he throws the pitch and immediately looks over the dugout, does the chop of the neck sign saying he's done, it's a concern. And the cameras caught Jeremy Hefner, their pitching coach, when he came back into the dugout, talking with others, and he said, it's bad. You're thankful. It doesn't appear to be, based on what the Mets told us, and let's leave open the possibility they're not telling us everything, but it appears that it doesn't involve his arm. But having that sort of injury in your core, that's not a minor thing for a pitcher. Your friend Mike Boddicker knows that far better than I do. About how, you know, because the rotation of the pitcher's body as they release the ball, that can be an injury that can be touchy. And you can have setbacks on your way back. It's not a matter of, hey, 2 weeks on the IL if you have a strained intercostal or something, some sort of a ribcage issue. It's a matter of weeks. And along the way, if you do have any setbacks, it's an issue. And I suspect that it's even more of an issue when you're talking about Max, because Max, when he pitches, he throws his whole body into his delivery. It was part of the reason why the Arizona Diamondbacks traded him, because they watched his delivery and the violence of it and the way that his head sort of jerks to the side and his Max effort and everything that he does, and it scared them. So if you're the Mets, you're sitting there right now unsure about when Max is going to come back, and I'm sure given their start, they're going to tell him, look, make sure you're healthy. Whenever you come back, make sure that you're completely healthy and don't push it, because if you have a setback, then we're talking about a lot of the season. So, maybe he's going to miss 6 weeks. Maybe he's going to miss 2 months. I'm not sure. And along the way, Jacob deGrom is out as well. And the Mets made an announcement the other day, very vaguely saying there are increased signs of or there continue to be signs of healing in that in the issue that he had. He's now, when he comes back, it'll be more than a year since he pitched. So if you're the Mets, you got major red flags right now with your pitching staff. The good thing is, that their owner, Steve Cohen, whose attitude is cost be damned, when the trade market really begins to heat up in the summertime, if they need a starting pitcher, they will get one. He will make sure of that.
We're visiting with Buster Olney, and Buster, also on the injury front, Bryce Harper's got this elbow issue, and I know that the man sitting across from me, Stephen St. John, was a longtime champion of bringing the DH to the National League. Could that keep one of the biggest stars in the game on the field despite an injury that could keep him, or at least in the batter's box, despite an injury that could keep him off the field?
Yeah, I talked with Bryce about this a few weeks ago, and he said that flat out. You know, without a DH, he's not playing right now because he can't throw. It's a big deal what he's going through. You know, they revealed that, you know, he's got a tear in that elbow, his UCL, if I remember correctly. He had an injection the other day to try to help with the healing. He's not going to throw for at least 6 weeks. And, again, I always tell you guys this, the teams, the players, they're entitled to release what they want, and we're entitled to believe what we want. I've talked with executives of other teams who say that all the information that we have screams that at some point he's going to need Tommy John surgery. Mm. He can still hit. He's fine to swing the bat. He's good there. It's just that he can't throw. And you do wonder if the Phillies, drift downward in the standings at some point, they, you know, do the Max Scherzer and say, okay, I'm done, and go and get it fixed, if, in fact, that's what's going on. But the only reason why he's playing is because the National League is a DH.
We have Buster Olney on the line right now from ESPN. Okay, Buster, one of the stars of the game, one of the best players in baseball, is Juan Soto. And so this is a kid that, I mean, and he's still a kid, right? He could end up being one of the best hitters we've ever seen. And so now there's talk that the Nationals might actually be compelled to trade him. What are you hearing about that? And if they do deal him, who would be the likely suitors?
Well, the talk was started by an article that I wrote yesterday, and I want to be absolutely clear. It was at this point, it's complete speculation, but it's based on conversation with club executives around the sport who are looking at the potential trade market for later in the year, and they see circumstances which may compel the Nationals to deal him. He's a couple of years away from free agency. Guys, during the wintertime, he turned down a $350 million dollar 13-year offer, more money than Harper got when he signed with the Phillies. He's 23 years old, okay? He's like his generation's version of Ted Williams, Babe Ruth. And you would say, I mean, your initial instinct is, well, why would the Nationals trade that guy? His agent is Scott Boras, who always takes his clients into free agency unless the player steps in, like Jared Weaver did with the Angels, like Andrew Jones did with the Braves, Xander Bogaerts a few years ago with the Red Sox. And so the expectation in the industry, if you turn down $350 million, you're going to hit the free agent market. And, guys, whatever his contract is, the long-term deal that he eventually signs, barring injury, it's going to be the biggest contract in the history of professional sports in North America. He might be the first guy to get $500 million. Here's the wild card in this situation. The Nationals are up for sale. And so you know that the incoming owners are going to want to have the situation resolved one way or the other. I'm assuming that they probably will, you know, get in touch, with the current ownership and say, look, try to sign him. Try to get this locked up. The best case scenario for us is that he stays. But if you can't do that, you don't want to put the team and have the first thing happen on your watch to be trading a franchise-level player. So executives of other teams are saying, look, if you're the incoming owners, you're going to want to force the outgoing ownership either get him signed or deal him, get him and get that out, because you don't want to have your first 2 years be completely consumed by the whole question of where Soto is. Now, interestingly, you know, I asked executives, okay, which two teams do you see being most motivated to go and get Soto if he's actually put out on the trade market this summer? And the two teams that I got back, the Toronto Blue Jays, very right-handed lineup, and how much fun would it be to see him and Vlad Guerrero Jr. hitting back-to-back, and two, the San Diego Padres, who got two prime young players, C.J. Abrams and Mackenzie Gore, that they could have put on the table to start the conversations. The Padres clearly are motivated to win. It's a really interesting situation from an incredibly unique player. Paul Ambichides, who I work with at ESPN, sent me a note after I read my piece. He goes, you know what? If he's traded, he would be the best young player traded since Babe Ruth in terms of a player who's 23 years old.
Wow, that's crazy. That's that's a long time and a big name.
His on-base percentage last year was 465. And in the abbreviated season the year before, his on-base percentage was .490.
And let me tell you something about his acumen. He is so impressive. He's hyper-competitive, yes, but he's unbelievably smart in terms of making adjustments, which is reflected in his approach at the plate. Guys, I think it was he started to learn English when he was 18 years old. Within 2.5 years, he was doing interviews on national television in his second language. And I talked to him about this. I'm like, that's unbelievable. So, you know, coming from me, if someone got a D+ in Spanish in my last year there, to have that level of confidence and acumen that he's doing interviews on television at 20.5 in his second language, that says a lot about the kid.
All right, we're visiting with Buster Olney. Let's talk about some kids that are playing for the Royals. MJ Melendez and Bobby Witt Jr. are hitting home runs now, and the Royals have won a couple games in a row, and we're excited to see these kids play. What do you make of these young guys for the Royals right now?
That they're slowly figuring it out, right? That they're making their adjustments as they go through. I tweeted this out earlier this morning that in the last 23 games, Bobby Witt's hitting .256, .302, .467, which isn't going to make you forget, George Brett's stats. But if you compare that with the major league averages this year, that context is really important. He has a higher batting average by almost 20 points than the major league average this year. His slugging percentage is higher by almost 70 points, okay? His on-base percentage is right in that mix. And look, you guys are seeing it play out day after day after day. He's putting it together, you know, in those last 23 games, 5 doubles, a triple, 4 homers, getting on base, getting more hits. My son has him on his fantasy team based on my recommendation. He was giving me a hard time at the beginning of the year, and now he's texting me saying, yeah, okay, here we go. Like, you can see him gathering momentum, and it's pretty cool. I'm glad that the Royals moved him in the lineup, because that's, let's face it, that's where he's going to be for years to come. And if you feel like that he's not overwhelmed emotionally, just put him there, let him figure it out, and to build as he goes forward.
What did what was your reaction when you heard that the Royals had fired their hitting coach, Terry Bradshaw? Because we were expecting something to happen because the Royals were off to such a poor start. And you know, you just can't you can't do nothing. Some people thought maybe it would be pitching coach Cal Eldred, but it's always interesting to see what adjustments or what moves are made early on when a team is underachieving. What did you think when you saw that?
So I had a conversation with a major league coaching staffer who you guys know, and I can't say his name because it was a off the record conversation or on background conversation, and he said to me that there's no doubt that the worst job in baseball right now is that of hitting coach. Because, you know, you show up every day and you do your work, but so many of the young players, especially, have their own personal hitting coaches. And so, you know, a lot of these guys will be doing stuff away from the ball field at 11 o'clock. You know, they worked on their swing all winter with their personal hitting coaches. They get to the ball field. They have conversations with the hitting coaches. But let's face it, that dynamic is set up in a way, if you do great, who gets the credit?
The
personal
player.
Hitting coach.
Oh, yeah.
If you and the player. If you struggle, guess who gets, who's going to be looked at and blamed for a lot of it is the guy who's in the dugout, you know, and talking through players' adjustments. I would say this generally. I never liked it when teams fire a coach in midseason. I think a lot of times it's scapegoating. But I don't have any personal knowledge, you know, direct knowledge of, you know, what was the dynamic between him and the other players, and did he not connect with a certain guy? Was it just a case of trying to get a different voice in there? Was there something? Because some young hitting coaches might be really good in the cage at 3 o'clock, and, you know, they work their tails off. But when it comes to, you know, at-bat to at-bat, maybe they don't help the players make adjustments with individual pitchers. That's why, you know, an experienced guy – for example, the Yankees have Hensley Mullin as their assistant hitting coach. He might be a guy the players gravitate toward because he's actually been in the box during the course of a game, and he can say, look, this is what they're trying to do. I don't know, the exact reason why, but I actually don't like it when teams, change coaches unless they absolutely have no choice.
So, Buster, one of the things that came out of this when the hitting coach move was made by the Royals is we had both J.J. Piccolo and then Dayton Moore addressing the media. And we spoke with Andy Rogers, who covers the team on a daily basis, about how it kind of was difficult to figure out, okay, what's the decision-making process like for the Royals now that J.J.'s the GM, but Dayton's still there as the president. And that's a structure that we're not used to really seeing around here in Kansas City, but I know there's structures like that with other clubs in baseball. Do you have any perspective on that? I mean, how should we expect things to work in that regard based on what you've seen at other clubs?
I think it totally depends on the personality of the quote-unquote head of baseball operations, right? You know, I've had conversations with Brian Cashman about this, the Yankees general manager. Guys, he's kept the same title since 1998. You know, he's not the quote-unquote head of baseball operations, and then you have a general manager below. He thinks a lot of times, you know, that's done to almost the surface level to keep other teams from asking for permission to hire guys. You know, or maybe you give them an opportunity to actually run the show. But it completely depends on, for lack of a better way to describe it, the generosity of the head of baseball operations. You know, I've heard of a situation in the last decade where a team did that. They promoted a young executive who's very highly regarded in the game to general manager, and the guy who moved up to head of baseball operations told that person initially, look, you're good to go. You can run the team. I'm just going to be off the side. I'm going to be focused on other issues in the organization, more business side. And then that person, head of baseball ops, got bored and then, like, boomerang back and wanted to get back into the decision-making. And it led to a conflict that led to the departure of the head of baseball operations. So it can be tricky. But you guys know Dayton Moore. I know Dayton Moore. If Dayton Moore, you know, told J.J., look, I want you to take on more, then that's something I think you take at face value. I think Dayton would absolutely follow through with the letter of the law. That said, he is responsible in the chain of command for what's going on with the team. And it would be appropriate for him in a time like the Royals had at the beginning with the offense struggling for him to press JJ and say, okay, what do we got going on here? You know, what are we doing or what kind of adjustments are you considering? That sort of thing. The other day when I worked on that story about, X factors in the trade market, what I got back from other executives was, look, how much do you think – they were asking me, how much do you think Dayton is injecting himself day-to-day into some of the baseball decisions? And, you know, for now – and I haven't talked to JJ, I haven't talked to Dayton specifically about that question, but, you know, that's something I'm sure that they work out between the two of them. And the fact they've known each other for so long, I suspect that's very much delineated. And I really can't wait to hear you guys talk to JJ to ask him how they worked that out.
Buster Olney is our guest. Hey, Buster, there was a trade that caught my eye when it happened, and now, boy, it's really catching my eye. Right before the season started, the night before the season started, the Padres and the Twins made a deal where Chris Paddock and Emilio Pagan were traded to the Twins in return for Taylor Rogers. And now Rogers has turned into one of the best closers in the National League. Now, Pagan has closed some games for the Twins, but Chris Paddock now, a couple of months later, he's done. He's got to have Tommy John surgery. Man, that's brutal. That's a brutal deal for the Minnesota Twins. Pagan's still good, but still, wasn't there some talk there of people questioning the last couple of years, like, the Padres, there's some funny business going on about maybe them not being totally forthright about the medicals of some guys they were trading. I don't know. That just popped to me, and I thought I'd get your reaction to that deal between the Padres and the Twins and the fallout.
Yeah, and I can speak directly to that because I, did the reporting on that story when it first came out. And I can't remember what year it was. It might have been like 16 or 17. But what happened is that internally the Padres kept two – this is what Major League Baseball found in its investigation. The Padres kept two separate files of medical information, one to be dispensed during trade conversations to opposing teams and one with internal.
Oh, boy.
And Right. And after that all came out, A.J. Preller, the general manager of the Padres, got an unprecedented suspension for a month, which, let's face it, in the big picture is a slap on the wrist, but other teams were furious about it. That, you know, they felt like that A.J., you know, and this happened, Drew Pomeranz with the Red Sox in a trade that summer. The Red Sox weren't happy about what happened. I think that's actually the, you know, the player that spurred this. But there were other teams that were complaining off the record as well, saying, wait a second, you know, we were told something that was in the medical records, and then the player comes over and starts telling us, yes, I got treatment on a daily basis on my, and I'm riffing here, on my shoulder, on my elbow. They were going nuts.
Wow.
Which is why MLB came down with discipline on the Padres at that point. That all said, I have no information that's what happened in this case. And I haven't heard anybody suspect it. Paddock did have some arm issues last year. His fastball velocity was down. So it's not like there weren't red flags out there already on his physical state.
I'm a little surprised they're still able to pull trades off, considering some of the stuff that you've heard. I mean, I've heard some of that stuff going back years.
Yep.
It's you know, you do enough deals like that, you start to wonder if people are going to be hesitant to answer the phone when you call. Hey, Buster, any big surprises for you so far to start the season a month and a half in?
Yeah, I think the Padres playing this well is somewhat of a surprise. I really believe that Bob Melvin, you know, although he's had this, you know, surgery issue and was out for a while, I think he's had a huge effect on the Padres. And the fact is, right now, they're playing on a pace that would take them over 100 wins. And, guys, they've done it without Fernando Tatis Jr. That's a surprise to the good. Surprise to the bad, the Detroit Tigers. I saw them in spring training. You know, you felt their hope. You felt like that, you know, that they had the players that could take them forward and this would be a year of progress. And so far, it's been a disaster. You know, they're on a pace right now to lose over 100 games. And so for as much as, you know, the issues that the Royals have had early in the season, they're in a better position right now than the Tigers are for sure.
Buster, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it. We will talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
That is Buster Olney from ESPN. We'll be back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk to Gary Lezak, get your forecast, Mark Boerichter, throw some cheese talk at you. Former Royals, or current Royals general manager, J.J. Piccolo. Former Chiefs wide receiver, Mark Boerichter. Current Royals general manager, J.J. Piccolo. And then we're going to have some post-game from the Royals win last night and also from Sporting Kansas City's win last night. So we got some good stuff planned for you between now and 10 o'clock. And right now, we're going to play a conversation I had. Had a chance to sit down with Creed Humphrey, the excellent center for the Kansas City Chiefs, a few days ago, and to chat with him about what he's been up to and some football and everything else. And so let's hear from Creed Humphrey of the Kansas City Chiefs.
We have Creed Humphrey, all-world center for the Kansas City Chiefs. You came into the NFL and you hit the ground running. You had a tremendous rookie year. And, you know, there's a great history of centers in the NFL for the Chiefs and in the Chiefs organization. Tim Grunhard comes on my show every Friday, and from day one he raved about you. And I know that you've had some contact with Tim Grunhard, and he played that position for a decade. Take me back to rookie mini camp and then your first training camp. When did you really feel like you were going to be able to take that starting job from day one and run with it the way you did?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was all about just confidence. Coming in, you know, I felt like I had something to prove. So, you know, coming in right away from rookie minicamp, you know, I was ready to come out and just prove what I can do. So they gave me a chance, and, you know, I just took that chance and didn't let it go. And, you know, I felt ready from day one. It was one of those things that, you know, once I just got down the playbook and everything, I knew I could, you know, make an impact. So really just coming in day one, doing the drills, everything like that, building a relationship with the people by me, you know, the different offensive linemen by me, I knew it'd be a great fit, and I knew that, you know, I could really make an impact year one.
You know, and you have a tremendous background in wrestling, and so and a lot of people have talked about how that can be such a great base for success as an offensive lineman. Tell me about your wrestling background and how that's helped you in football.
Yeah, you know, I started wrestling when I was 4 years old, so it was actually the first sport I ever got into. My dad was a collegiate wrestler. He was a three-time All-American at the University of Central Oklahoma. So he had me and my brother in the wrestling room as soon as we could walk. But so that was the first sport I started. And really with how it pertains to offensive line play, you know, it teaches you so much about leverage, understanding how to move a person's body in a direction they don't want to, you know, at ease. So that was a big thing for me. And then also just mental toughness, you know, in the wrestling room, you're cutting weight all the time, you know, not eating, nothing like that, and you still have to go perform well. So just learning, you know, about mental toughness and things, that was a big thing for me. You know, we go out to St. Joe's for training camp. It's humid, hot, you know, you're sweating so much, you're doing so much conditioning. And if you have that mental toughness, you know, it's easy to get through. So that was a big key for me too. You know, whatever point in the game you get into, you know, whatever the score is, whatever it is, you can just keep on going without even hesitating. You know, it's kind of like the 13 seconds against Buffalo, you know, one of those things, you know, you just kind of go through and you're like, well, that's fine. You know, it's a circumstance. Let's go through it.
Did you have to cut weight when you wrestled?
Yeah, I did. In high school, I did. Yeah. So I played football my junior season around 310, then cut down to 285. But actually, funny story. So I went to the Army All-American Combine or whatever it was, and I did that. I weighed in at 305 there, and then that was on a Sunday. And then that Tuesday, I made weight at 285, so I cut, 20 pounds right there in 2 days, just to wrestle that Tuesday.
Can you pass along that diet plan to me? I think I could use that. I don't know. One thing I've noticed between you and your fellow rookie last year, Trey Smith, and then another draft pick this year in Darian Kennard. And you look like a very nice young man right now with a smile on your face, but you've all been described as having maybe a mean streak out there. And there ain't nothing wrong with that. And that's another thing that Tim Grunhard loves, and Kennard's coming in that with that as well. Is that something that you guys, you want to go out there? And it seemed like when the Chiefs drafted you and drafted Trey, and revamp that offensive line, they wanted to change maybe from a reputation of a finesse offensive line, a bit more physical, mauler to get out there, and let's just say it right, kick ass. Is that something that you take pride in, going out there and being physical and setting the tone for the rest of the football team?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we have the right guys in the room to do that, you know, with Orlando at left tackle.
Right.
You know, a physical mauler. We got Joe Tooney. He's the same way. Me, Trey, just brought in Darian. So, I mean, our whole room is filled with guys that want to go out there and just be physical and dominate people. So, it's definitely it's a good thing when you have that many people in the room with the same goal. So, you know, everybody gets along in the room, and we go out there. We do our game, and then we come back in the phone room that next day and just, you know, laugh about it and, you know, high five everybody when they get a pancake, things like that. You know, it's a lot of fun. And you know, you can't play offensive line unless you're physical. So I mean, that's such a key thing to it. So if you're not doing that, then you're not really playing offensive line.
How great was 13 seconds? I just like how you can say 13 seconds and everyone knows what we're
just
talking about.
Yeah.
How great was 13 seconds?
It was awesome, man. You know, we were all on the sideline, they scored, you know, we knew we had 13 seconds and nobody had their head down. You know, everybody was ready to go back out there and get after it. We knew we had the pieces to get it, and so we just went out there confident, and we made it happen. We were really excited about it, and it was, you know, such a fun game to play in, so it was awesome.
You know, in the offseason with the trade of Tyreek Hill and adding so many draft picks, going out and signing some key free agents, it seems like the team got a lot younger, but maybe some veteran leaders are no longer in that locker room, and so guys like you might be looked upon, even though you've only played for a year in the league, You're looked upon maybe as a leader in that locker room. Tell me a little bit about that dynamic. I know that you haven't had a chance to go through OTAs yet. We had rookie minicamp already. But what does that mean to you to be able to go in there and maybe help fill that void with some of the leadership that's gone?
Yeah, you know, I want to take on any role I need to take on. So if they need it from me, then, you know, I definitely don't mind doing it. You know, I like leading by example if I can. And if the team needs me to, you know, step up and be a leader, be more vocal, you know, I'm happy to do it. So just whatever role comes on, you know, I'm excited to do it and I'm going to do it.
What's it like to you know, you get drafted and then obviously you're thrilled to get drafted, but then you realize, okay, I'm going to the Kansas City Chiefs where Patrick Mahomes is going to be the quarterback I'm snapping the ball to. You've gone through it. You know, you had a great year last year. But man, what a great spot. You have a head coach that's a former offensive lineman, that's an offensive line guy. He gets it. How much did that mean for you to get drafted into that situation and have a quarterback like Mahomes, and more importantly, a head coach that gets offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have fallen into a better situation. So, you know, as soon as I got the phone call, I mean, I was ecstatic, you know, knowing Coach Reed's background, knowing that I'm playing with the best quarterback in the league, you know, knowing the pieces that are around me, knowing, you know, the offensive lineman that they brought in. I was just ecstatic. You know, I knew Orlando for years now because we were at Oklahoma together. So, you know, having him around, that was awesome. So, I mean, I couldn't have – I mean, it was a perfect fit for me, you know, and I just kind of took it and went running with it. So I was, you know, ecstatic to be here.
My good friend that works at the radio station with me, Todd Lebo, he's an Oklahoma grad. And so anytime I'm going to have somebody on the show from Oklahoma, he forces me to ask these questions. So I got to ask, because this has been a crazy time for Oklahoma football, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so all I want you to do is be honest with me, all right? We're down here at Boulevard. You're having a nice cold beer, so I expect honesty, all right? Are you happy or are you sad that Oklahoma's going to the SEC?
I'm excited about it. You know, it just brings new opportunities. You know, the Big 12 was such a great conference for so long, and, you know, SEC is kind of becoming that premier conference now. So getting into that, it's going to be really fun. You know, they're going to be playing a lot of great teams week in and week out, and I'm excited to see what happens.
What was your reaction when Lincoln Riley left for USC?
Yeah, you know, I was surprised by it for sure. You know, I have no ill will towards Coach Riley. You know, he gave me a shot, you know, in Oklahoma. So, I mean, I'm going to have love for that guy for the rest of my life. But it was definitely surprising with me, but I thought we brought in probably the best person we could have in Coach Venables, and just being down there this offseason around him, you can tell, you know, he's going to take us in the right direction and really get us to where we want to be. So I'm really excited to see the future of the program.
I'm glad that you still have love for Coach Riley, because Todd is very angry still, but he's like you, he loves Brent Venables. So you think that they hired the right guy and they're going to be bouncing back just fine?
For sure. Yeah. You know, I don't think they're going to, you know, have a down year or nothing, man. I'm excited to see what they do. You know, it's a great culture, great fit for Coach Venables, and it's just a good time to be an OU football fan.
Okay, so speaking of bouncing back, you guys made it all the way to the AFC Championship game. We all know what happened in the second half. When you have something like that, your rookie year, do you go back and watch that and relive that and try to figure out what went wrong? Do you put that aside and say, I know what happened, I'm going to look forward and just try to do what I can to get to the Super Bowl? How do you handle a very difficult loss like that?
Yeah, you know, it was definitely a tough loss. And for me, you know, I watched the game a few times in those next coming days after the game. And then once I got what I needed to see, you know, I put it behind me and got back to work. So, you know, I'm not letting that linger around. And I don't think the whole locker room is either. So, you know, we're ready to move forward and, you know, get back to that Super Bowl and win it this year. So we're excited. A great opportunity this year. There's going to be some great teams in the AFC, so we can't wait for the competition.
What do you think of the schedule now? First, you start off at Arizona, and then you have the first Thursday night game on Amazon against the Chargers, and then you go back on the road, and then week four, Tampa Bay, Tom Brady, we thought he was retired. He's back again. He's 57 years old, whatever that is. I mean, it's three of the first four games are on the road, five primetime games. It's a hell of a schedule. What did you think when you saw it?
It is, and, you know, I couldn't be more excited about the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's going to be a fun time. You know, a ton of great teams we're playing this year, so we're pumped about it. You know, we love competition. We embrace competition, so we're ready to get after it and really show what we can do this year.
Final question for you. For you, you were so damn good your rookie year, but, you know, players can always get better. What did you work on? What do you want to work on to try to improve? What are some of the things that you focused on in the offseason to try to take that next step to the next level?
Yeah, you know, there's always things you can get better at, and there was, a lot of things looking back last season, talking with coaches and everything. You know, there's still a lot of room for me to grow, you know, no matter how well I played last year. So I'm excited about it. You know, I've worked a ton this off season, you know, getting after in the weight room, getting stronger, faster, you know, studying the playbook, things like that, so I can really understand exactly what we're trying to do at all points in the game. And when you do that, you know, the game slows down for you a lot and you're able to play a lot more free. So, you know, I'm really pumped about this season. I'm ready to get back after it.
And Creed, I look forward to watching you and covering you in your second year. The season starts in Arizona, and then it ends in Arizona in the Super Bowl.
Yes, sir.
That's what's going to happen. That's Creed Humphrey, all-world center for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Creed, one more question. How do you think this interview went?
Well, glad Nate wasn't here. Son of a bitch. I don't like him.
Wow. Okay. What? Thanks, Creed Humphrey. Bye.
Why do you think he dislikes me so much? Is he just mad that I didn't show up for the interview? Is that
I don't
what
know.
Happened?
His voice kind of changed there at the end, so I could tell he was mad. It didn't sound.
Man, I wanted to be there. I was buying a car.
Tell him, not me. Don't tell
out.
Me. Look, don't tell me. I know. Don't tell me. I have no problem with it. I'm not mad.
I would have loved to talk wrestling with him.
Talk to
you know,
him.
An Oklahoma guy that's wrestling. I mean, being from Ark City. You know, that's basically Oklahoma right there, and it's wrestling country.
He's the one that said that he was glad you weren't there.
It didn't sound like his voice when he said that. It sounded like somebody else, almost like somebody like you.
Listen to me.
Changing
it's
your
what
voice
he just
to
played.
Sound like him.
I don't know.
Is that right?
Talk to Marco.
It almost sounded like it was you pretending to be Creed Humphrey there for a second.
You need to get your
By the way,
out.
How much did Matt Beasley wish I wouldn't have showed up for that interview that you did with him? I did a pretty good job of keeping my mouth shut for most of your...
Man, when I glared at you one time.
You did.
You stopped talking.
You shot me an evil eye.
Because you were not looking at the clock. I knew Matt had to get out of here. I had Ben Messner text me. I'm trying to balance everything. And we're talking about, by the way, that was Creed Humphrey. Thank you, Creed Humphrey, for, you know... I apologize.
Regardless of what Creed has to say about me, I'm a big fan of his. Well, I think he's a great player. Seems like a really good guy.
When you see him, you can work things out. And so, yesterday, we recorded a podcast with Matt Beasley for Hot Mic with SSJ. And Nate was very... so passive-aggressive. First, he says, "Hey, I'll be in there for the podcast. I could add some context to things or whatever." I said, "Okay, hey, that's fine, great. I have Lebo come in to some. You've been into, you know, I'm good with it, whatever. What's so funny to you? Because you know this is how he is, right? And so then, because you saw all the text messages,
that's
right?
That's what I was saying. I was
and
like,
so
yeah.
then." I'll look it up.
Yeah, pull him out.
Oh, boy.
Pull him out.
Okay, so then I said, okay, fine. You can be in there. Done deal. I don't think about it again. And that's good because then, you know, there's something, like you said, you could add to it or bring something up or, you know, add some layers to the podcast. And so then, and we're talking about something else. We're not even talking about the podcast. All of a sudden, we're talking about vacation days.
Right.
And then Nate texts. Do you have some, I want some dramatic music. Do you have that dramatic music for me?
Oh boy, you're going to do the dramatic music reading?
Well, a little bit.
Dramatic reading music?
Because I felt like there was some drama that I was having.
Wasn't drama.
It felt dramatic.
No.
It did.
It's just me being a little needy, that's all.
Because Nate, after Nate... said, you know, volunteered himself.
Invited myself onto your podcast.
And I'm fine with that. I said, sure, yeah. Because guess what? Like, I have Lebo in there sometimes because he's a smart guy and he can come up with some things, some details that I miss. And I don't like, when I'm in a podcast, I'm not going to sit there and just read from a script, or, you know, because I'm having a conversation. And if there's like, you know, Lebo's Mr. Detail. He's like, you know, he's like Encyclopedia Brown.
You did say a little bit like, well, hey, you know, this isn't going to be just your soccer interview.
Right,
you know,
yeah, don't,
like
yeah,
that.
Don't be.
You did
you know,
tell
be,
me that. You know, you this know, is Hot Mic with SSJ.
Right, don't be doing, you know, me talking, hey, did you see the sporting game last night?
Champions League final.
I love soccer.
Right, okay. You told me that.
Right. And so then you told me, we were in the studio, hey, I could come in there and be in the podcast with you. yeah, it's, I said, sure, of course, go ahead. Who better? Because I know even if I don't say, come on in there, you're going to be hiding under the table or something or pretending to wash the windows.
Just like
or,
looking around the
or
corner.
Just, you know, while, you know, peeking behind the window. Or just,
oh, hey, guys.
Oh, I forgot something. I didn't know you were doing that.
Oh, are you guys using this studio now?
So then out of nowhere, where I'll look up, you'll be, you know, in the ceiling, you know, the, behind one of the tiles.
Oh, just cleaning out the air ducts. You
know. I don't know. We're talking about vacations. I don't know why I get this text. I'm going to stay out of your deal with bees tomorrow.
I don't like the tone you read that in.
Don't want to get in the way. And then I just, you know, do you have any concerns about the something or whatever? And you're not really. I think it'll be better without me there. So then we go back to talking, and I just ignore you there. So we go back to talking about the show and other stuff, right? And then about after 6 or 7 texts later between me and Marco, I text, and I don't think you'll get in the way on the podcast. I think it'll be fun, but it's up to you. Oh, well, what time are you guys be recording it tomorrow?
It's such a jerk.
And I said his window's 10 to 11:30. Well, let me look at my schedule tomorrow. It's kind of packed as a sporting game tomorrow night. I don't know.
And you're the one that said you wanted to do it to begin with.
Well, I did want to do it.
And then...
But then I started looking at my schedule. It's a crazy day when you got, you know, I got a morning show and sporting on the same day.
He wants to be courted.
I want to be wanted.
Right.
I want you to want me.
He wants his ego to be stroked.
I'm a cheap trick.
He wants, like a peacock, he wants to go in there and strut his feathers and... want to comment on how beautiful he is.
That's what it is. Tell me you love me. Yeah. Tell me you want me in studio.
And was it fun?
We had a good time. I contributed a little bit.
Right.
And Matt said I did a good job of staying out of the way and not talking too much.
Right. And Matt shut you down more than I did. He goes, I'd have you tell the story, but we want to finish the podcast today or something like that. But it was really good. So I encourage you. If you like Matt Beasley, or if just it's, you don't even have to be a huge soccer fan to appreciate it and enjoy it. Hot Mic with SSJ, you could subscribe at YouTube. We'd love it if you did. I'd love it if you did. Nate probably doesn't care if you do, but I would love it. Subscribe, watch it, download it, listen to whatever you listen to, your favorite podcast, Spotify, Apple, whatever. And Matt has some really interesting things to say about his career. And also some really interesting things to say about finishing his career down in Austin as opposed to with Sporting Kansas City. And so I would encourage you to listen to that. He's very thoughtful answers and just a great guy. And I look forward to having him back to tell more stories with or without Nate. Like you two said, with or without you. But, you know, you're always welcome in there. But I thoroughly enjoyed my time with Matt yesterday.
Man, he's got some stories to tell, doesn't he?
And we didn't even, the tip of the iceberg. And again, just wanted to kind of just overall and give people a chance to get to know him a little bit better, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome when you do these, like the Jeff Chedia one the other day I listened to. It was great. You almost, well, now I want to do 2 more podcasts with this guy because I feel like he just touched on a few things that I would like to explore even deeper, you know.
I just want to do a whole episode on Chedia within the Whitlock years and the time he spent with him up in Michigan. Right. We will take a break. We'll be right back after this on WHB. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's time to say hello to Gary Lezak. Hello, Gary. Oh, really? You don't say.
Good morning.
Hey, there he is.
There you are.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's go for three in a row.
Let's go Royals.
If they go 15-5 over the next 20 games, you know, they could get hot. They'll be right back in it.
Did you know a lot of people are saying that Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez are the dynamic duo?
Wow.
Uh-huh.
They do look like the dynamic duo.
Right.
You know? I love it.
Which one's there Batman, which one's Robin?
I don't know. I mean, that's still to be defined
right.
in the next few weeks.
Good point.
Yeah. Still to be defined. Batman and Robin, the dynamic duo. Wow, when they both hit a home run in the game, the Royals are undefeated.
Hey, two-game winning streak.
I know.
That's not a winning streak. No, but they win. If they win today, it's a winning streak, right? Three games is a winning streak, right?
Two in a row is a winning streak.
Nope.
Mark Boerichter's over here telling you you're full of garbage.
Nope.
No, it's not. That's just back-to-back wins. That's just back-to-back wins. That's not a winning streak. You have to put three together.
What if you had a three-game season? Would two in a row be a winning streak?
If you had a three-game season, the sport would be stupid.
Yeah. That's not a season.
Let me ask you a question. How long is it going to take for you to comment on my conversation with your beloved Creed Humphrey from the Oklahoma Sooners and the Kansas City Chiefs? If there was ever a player that you would embrace, it would be Creed Humphrey, but you say nothing.
I don't know all about it. I've been busy with other things.
Well, I just played the segment before, so that's fine.
I missed it. You know, I would have. You know me. I would have commented on it.
Mark will podcast it for you.
I'll go listen. I was obsessed with the LRC. The LRC this year, and a lot of you have been following it for many years. This year happens to be a 64-day cycle. Okay. The river of air above us is cycling regularly. I discovered this in 1987, 1988, and weather 2020 is bringing it to the world, and we're doing our best here. So 64 days, and I got people going, oh, I'll give you that one, Gary. I'll give you that one. Give me this one. Listen to this. Denver, Colorado. Today, the forecast. Denver, Colorado. You ready?
Yeah.
Denver, Colorado, the forecast is for a high of 90 today.
Whoa.
90 degrees in Denver. All right? There's a red flag warning, high fire danger.
Oh, I'm looking at some different information here.
Uh-oh.
And the forecast for tomorrow.
What?
3 inches of snow tomorrow night. So 90 today, 3 inches of snow tomorrow night. Okay.
Man.
My forecast for Denver is 2 more losses to the Chiefs this year.
Oh! How? How?
Right.
Three interceptions by Russell Wilson.
Are we at a Denver radio station right now? Am I supposed to be talking about the Broncos
in about five minutes? Because he loves Denver weather.
Okay.
I know. Well,
are you going there this weekend, Gary? Is that why you're talking about it?
Hey, Gary, speaking of things that don't have anything to do with Kansas City, did you see the score of this NHL playoff game yesterday? Did you see this, Steven?
I'm just good. I did not, but what was it, a high-scoring game?
It was a high-scoring game, the Edmonton Oilers against the Calgary Flames.
What, the what Flames?
Calgary.
Calgary?
That's how
Calgary?
You played in Canada? No. How do they say in Canada?
Most people in Calgary call it Calgary. They call it Calgary you're on the French in the eastern Canada.
French.
I prefer the way the French say
Calgary.
It. It was
the French.
6-9.
How many goals did Calgary score?
They scored 9, and Edmonton scored 6.
Wow.
In a hockey game, it was 6-9.
In the Battle of Alberta.
Usually, that's right before your segment. Is that what DeMarco does? He has to call Gary?
Yeah, hurry up, Briggs. We got to call Gary.
I don't know why it talks like that.
Make your point.
What is it?
So it was 90 degrees today in Denver.
Oh, good. More
three
Denver.
Inches tomorrow night in Denver. The last time it snowed there, remember, it's a 64-day cycle. Last time it snowed there, 64 days ago.
Unbelievable.
It was 70 on March 15th and 7.3 inches of snow on March 16th and 17th.
That's crazy.
I'm just saying, this is what we bring to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Is there any way you could give the Kansas City weather by any chance?
No. I cannot. Okay.
I would like a cold front to get here. How about that?
Well, you're going to get a cold front.
Oh, okay? Well.
Oh, boy.
You got your wish.
Thank you.
Saturday, 55 degrees.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's shirtless weather for me, buddy.
All right, there you go. Mm-hmm. Today, these clouds that are spreading across our sky are the tops of thunderstorms, not associated with any moisture tongue today. All right?
Mm. What?
The tops of thunderstorms. And we are under the anvils with rain down near Rich Hill, Missouri, and down near Pleasanton, Kansas. Linn County and Bates County down there has some rain. But we get the tops of those. These will move away, getting up to 88 degrees in Kansas City and 55 on Saturday. All right, so maybe some rain Saturday. We'll just have to see. Anyway, that's your forecast. The LRC, I'm bringing it to you every day, the most accurate and long-range forecast. Okay?
Thank you.
And anything else, guys? That's it?
Got a dad joke for you.
Oh, Jesus.
What? You have a dad joke?
Marco just said you don't have the time.
Wow.
Shut it down.
Man, I just got big boyed by Marco.
We're out of time. You know
what? Miss out on a good dad joke today, just so you know.
Well, then hold it for tomorrow when Gary decides not to give the full forecast for Denver.
He's going to give us the forecast for Calgary.
Yeah, all right.
Tomorrow's for Bismarck, North Dakota.
Oh, thank you, Gary.
All right, here he is. Better, faster, and cheaper primary health care is Dr. Troy Burns.
Thanks, Gary. As you've known for years, Pro Partners is a different kind of family medicine practice that guarantees direct access to your personal physician literally anytime. If you want the peace of mind of having a doctor who's always available, give Pro Partners a call or check us out on the web at propartnershealthcare.com.
Thanks, old Denver Lezak, for the forecast. We'll be right back after this with Mark Bowrichter on WHP.